that contains light and guidance. The recognition is there. It could not be anti-Jewishness. Thirdly, it is impossible to think of these punishments as punishment for people because they rejected him as a prophet. He was hoping they would follow him, but they rejected him. Why? Because the prophet and Muslims are prohibited by the text of the Quran in many verses. One is the chapter 2, verse 256, let there be no compulsion in religion. The freedom of conscience and worship is guaranteed in several places in the Quran. With this background of what is not, let's see what was, in terms of proper approach to enforcement of the law. Number one, the Prophet never stereotyped and lumped all the Jews together when it came to punishment. They were together in terms of their rights, their unity and religion, that's fine. But they were never together when punishment was inflicted. Only the offending tribe was punished, not the others. And that's significant, because if you're anti-group of people, you tend to lump them like the kind of treatment Muslims are being subjected to, especially in North America. You lump everybody together. No, only the tribe that committed the offense. Secondly, the punishment for the offense was always, always proportionate to the offense that was committed. For example, without getting into great details, in the case of Banu Qaynuqa, it was a major offense, but in the case of Banu Nadir, the next incident, the offense was much greater, including conspiracy to kill the Prophet. And in the case of Banu Qurayza, it was what we call today, in modern legal language, high treason at the time of war. We said earlier, and that's what we'd like to focus a little bit more on, because they were, of course, fatalities in this kind of punishment. We mentioned earlier that one of the clauses of the Constitution of Medina is that both Jews and Muslims defend Medina against invaders or attackers, that none should cooperate with the enemy against their fellow Medinites people living in Medina and its surrounding. And then we know historically, and you read the most authentic reference on that, the Sirah of Ibn Ishaq, that the Arabs, when they lost hope of really trying to destroy the Prophet, they tried to gather a huge army, a coalition of various tribes, not limited anymore to the Meccan people, a huge army, 10,000 strong. They surrounded Medina with the view of trying to wipe out the Muslims. Now Muslims and Jews were living side by side in Medina. Yet information were relayed to the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, that there have been contacts between the invading army and the chief of the tribe of Banu Qurayza in order to get rid of Muhammad as a problem for them and for them also, for the pagan Arabs as well as for the Jews. In fairness, Ibn Ishaq says that in the beginning, when that offer was made or encouragement to the chief of the tribe of Banu Qurayza, he hesitated. And look at his words and acknowledgement. He says, "Ma alimna min Muhammadin illa wafa'a." When another fellow Jew, who was also a head of another tribe, tried to say, "That's your chance. Muhammad and Muslim do not stand any chance. They will be finished. So you better join." In the beginning, he said, "No, we have never seen from Muhammad except faithfulness," meaning respect of his agreement. So he did hesitate. But apparently, he was tempted. And he, you know, in these tribes, when they make a decision, it's not the decision of the chief. They were quite democratic. At least people of fighting age, the adults, would meet and discuss a very important issue like that. And it appears that the consensus finally that, yes, Muhammad never betrayed his treaty, but he doesn't stand a chance, so let's join hands. The Prophet wanted to make sure, not to jump to conclusions, so he sent an emissary to talk to the leaders of that tribe to see whether this information is correct or not, not just to jump the gun on the basis of claims of imminent dangers, as you hear today in recent times. He wanted to make absolutely sure. And he goes and talks that emissary. And he tells him, is it true, the treaty that we have? And he said, what treaty? What treaty? They come back and relay the information that it is true. It is coming through the horse's mouth. The treaty is no longer respected or acknowledged by that tribe. But then they say it was the prophet who ordered the execution of the fighting men. In fact, this is a great falsification of history. And in fact, if the prophet even did that, it would have been perfectly his authority. He's been accepted by all parties as the head of the state. And here you have a case of high treason at the time of war when everybody was in danger, Muslims in particular, and you get a stab in the back from within. What would any state do, any head of a state do in a case like it would have been his authority even if he ordered the capital punishment for those responsible for that betrayal. But in fact, he didn't even use that authority. When he was besieged by the head of hypocrites, Ibn Salul, he suggested that that tribe, the offending tribe, chooses its own arbitrator. Its own arbitrator. And whatever decision he comes up with, it is binding. What I happen, like Brother Shamshad said, that I teach not only Islamic studies, I teach also management, more particularly industrial relations. And I know, like many of you also in the legal profession, that when you talk about arbitration as opposed to conciliation or mediation, arbitration means that you choose someone who is mutually accepted by both parties. Yet the Prophet was so generous and so lenient that he says, you choose your own arbitrator. And they did. And you know how they chose? They chose a man by the name of Sa'd ibn Mu'adh. And why they chose him? Because he was their ally before Islam came to Medina. He was very close to them. And he was familiar with their Torah and their system, even though he was not a Jew himself. They chose him. And Sa'd ibn Mu'adh stands there and addresses both the Prophet and Muslims, as well as the Jews, this particular tribe, Banu Qurayza. And he's basically trying to get approval from them that if I come up with a decision, would everybody abide by it? And by the way, he need not ask that question. Again, anyone in industrial relation or law, you know that arbitration is final and binding. There could be no challenge for the arbitrator's decision, even in modern legal systems, unless there is a proof of bribery or violation of basic rules of common law, like refusing to hear evidence and so on. But otherwise, you don't say the arbitrator granted us 5% increase in pay, but we don't agree, so we're not going to implement it. No, once you agree to arbitration, you know that the decision is final and binding. This is very clear and acceptable principle. And Sa'd ibn Mu'adh stands there, he says to the tribe of Banu Qurayza, I'm going to rule on you in accordance of your own Torah, in accordance with your own Torah, which provide, of course, for capital punishment, at least for fighting men. The women and children were spared. Yet they keep saying the Prophet massacred. It is true that the Prophet agreed with his judgment, but he didn't have a choice to agree. It was an arbitration decision that everybody agreed to accept. So I hope that this clarifies some of those distortions that sometimes we hear in the media or some other writings. A second encounter with Christians. Here again, we find the positive and negative. Even in the case of Jews, they have been the positive and negative. They were good relationship at one point until they started breaking the agreement. So every situation was dealt with accordingly. With Christians, also there was the positive and negative. Example of the positive, when the Christians of Najran, the region of Najran, which is now in Yemen, sent their emissaries to find out about Islam and talk to the Prophet, peace be upon him. He was so courteous with them. He received them cheerfully. And you know where he took them? He hosted them in his own mosque. In his own mosque. And he let them speak freely about their beliefs. He answered their question and so on. Some narrators say that at one point in this discussion, the Christian group said, can we be excused to go out? He says, why is that? Said, we want to do our prayers. He said, you're welcome to do it here. Imagine the hospitality that he showed to the